All right, Investor Plus is officially live, and it's everything you've been waiting for.
We're talking AI power networking to connect you with other investors who are serious about building their portfolio, not just dreaming about it.
You'll get access to Market Master Her, our step-by-step ebook that'll help you master any market, and an on-demand real estate fundamentals course that'll help you build your confidence. And nationwide chapter access, exclusive discounts worth over $6,000, and a 21-day meditation guide because, hey, balance is key. Real estate development seems like a strategy for experienced investors only. Too often, investors think you need millions, connections, or decades of experience, and they stay stuck on the sidelines watching others build wealth.
Today, we're sitting down with Katie Kim. She's a powerhouse real estate developer who started her journey at just 15 years old. Katie is going to share how you're going to be able to evaluate a piece of land, align your project with the community needs, and leverage the expertise of a strong team that will help you to turn a raw piece of land into a thriving development.
Welcome to the Investor Podcast. I'm Liz Faircloth.
And I am your co-host, Andrea Gadelli. When we think about development, we think about that developer that came to our neighborhood and built that odd building that clearly does not belong. So Katie, in today's episode, we're going to break down new development, and we're going to start by understanding the importance of the community needs before getting started with the construction process. So for the investors that are listening and looking to start new development, what is the first step that you recommend them to take to understand what the community, the neighborhood really need and want?
Great question. The first thing I'd recommend people doing is going and looking at the tapestry reports, seeing where the community is leaking sales tax dollars. That's going to be the motivation, the money motivation that they need to start those conversations about how to get into that development game in the community. Next, you really need to start talking to your local community leaders, so the EDCs, your chamber, and get a pulse for what they're seeing. And then the third I go to is our small business owners. They are the heartbeat of our communities. They know what we need, what's being asked for. And then again, those step one and step two is going to guide those conversations and discussions, because now you're going to know not only what the community needs and wants, but what can make money, what you can ask for incentives on, and bring that development home to create that ripple effect.
And I want to emphasize here for all of you that are like, okay, but why? Why do I need the community on my side, even though I have the rights, the variances, the approval to build a building over there? I want to highlight that, Katie. Why do you want the old folks, the business owners, everybody on your side?
Well, simply put, they can make your project better and they can enhance that ripple effect. So one quick example, we had a bakery project go into a community that was a $5.5 million deal. They got $1.6 million from the community and about $600,000, a little bit under that, from the county. Those are deals that change the financial structure of those. And the second benefit is it created $15 million of development ripple effect in 2 years and $35 million in 4 years. That's real money. So if you're going to invest in a community, you start with one project and the ripple will rising tide raises all boats.
But what I've seen, Katie, and I don't know about you, I'm sure you've seen this, that, and I see it in my own community, that when a developer is doing something, the rumor mill begins, right? The rumor
mill,
you see it happening.
No matter what it is, they don't like it.
No matter what it is, they don't like it, right? And so you're navigating a lot as a developer, right? Even on a small project versus a large project. And so how does someone listening that wants to break into, right, a new development, whether it's they want to build a single family home, or they actually want to do a full on mixed use development, right? Because it could be anything in between. How do they begin to navigate the landscape of the community to say, okay, what's going to be an uphill battle or what with some tweaks I can work through. Like, because you never want to be the person or the investor that's like literally banging your head against the wall. And I've been in communities that I'm just like, we're not investing there anymore because of that heartache. So how do you navigate that as someone listening that wants to break into development? You know, you're going to have some challenges, but how do you navigate the right communities to work with that you're not going to have so much challenges?
Yeah. And Liz, that's a great question. Sometimes you don't know. I mean, that's the answer, but really network is net worth. Right. So the more you can network in a community, understand their needs, their pain points and their, you know, their desires, you're going to be able to get a pulse on that. I've gone into communities and been tackled, with pitchforks and stuff like that, but it's staying true to the reason you're why, the reason you're there, the reason you're developing, the reason you want to improve the community. You know, some controversial developments, quick example, we took, an urban infill two blocks that was densely renter occupied and the community had a homeownership issue. We did a redevelopment with the city and flipped it and we were targeting to have single family homes, 3-bedroom, 2-bath townhomes. And you would have thought I was like stripping people from their houses and I crucified at the stake and staying true to why we were doing it, and we lived in that. We put our money where our mouth is. We bought a bungalow, put our house there, and after a while, the neighbor came over and she apologized. She goes, we were lied to. We were told we this and that. So staying true to the mission is key. And having your network really lift you up and know your why and being transparent.
Oh my gosh, you brought me memories, Katie. I don't think I was prepared the first time that I went through a community meeting to change the zoning of a small triplex in South Philadelphia years and years ago. I left that meeting in tears.
Mm-hmm.
Now I look back, I took everything personal. I took everything personal, but I was so unprepared. I had so many different expectations. It was a building that was dilapidated. Literally, the windows were falling into people on the street. Imagine glass, everything else. And we were going to make the bottom that was a candy store into another unit. So a simple conversion from a mixed use to a triplex in there. And I went to that meeting. I think if they had tomatoes, they would have thrown in my face. 100%. And what I was very, very surprised, and I want to ask your opinion on that, is that the community board, the people that were sitting on the board, mm-hmm. many of them had no real estate experience whatsoever. So a lot of the things that they were saying, and I'm like, what are you talking about? Like we had to explain certain things to them, and they were there like the defenders of the community versus really looking to the benefit of why that project was a good fit there. And the same thing happened that you were saying to me, a neighbor after this whole story happened came to me and was like, well, the neighbors painted a very different picture. We thought you were going to have a lot of like student kids here living here. I'm like, do you think that I want that? Like, what are you talking about? The funniest thing is that during that meeting, the community board, they asked me if I was going to keep the chicken coop that I had at the top of my building. And I'm like, excuse me? What a chicken coop? It's like, yeah, I can see it up there. I'm like, I don't have a chicken coop at the top. That is just how we get out to the deck. There's no way that we can have it. So they imagined different things, but have you experienced, because my expectation was like, okay, well, I'm going to be dealing with people that understand real estate versus people that don't know anything about it. What has been your experience during those fun meetings?
So I feel for you on that. I could literally feel your pain on that one. I've been at a lot of those meetings. And to me, it's interesting to understand who sits on those boards, right? And again, that goes so much back to network. You have to know the council people and their passion points. Is it the sidewalk guy, right? There's always a sidewalk guy that wants sidewalks.
Yes.
There's not sidewalks. books,
the
right?
Trash. Like,
yes. The, you know, you have, everybody's got their thing. So you, that's why you have to really network before you have the project, before you have the ask, so you can know. And then you're building a rapport with somebody before you have an ask, right? Like, and it's important to realize that those people on those boards, zoning boards particularly, and council, a lot of them don't have any experience. They just want to run because, you know, they want to do good in their community, which is great and it's noble. So I feel like as a developer, a lot of times you're teaching them why it's good, which goes back to that first point is know your tapestry report, right? Is know where your community's leaking money. Because with that bakery project, we also created a downtown business development district that put another $180,000 into the community to help them do all these activities that they wanted to do, right? And so then we could talk to that benefit. But, you know, people still don't understand it. You know, we all have our horror stories of going to those meetings. And as a working mom, I mean, I had my kids in the back of one of them watching me be like, in essence, burned at the stake, right? And, you know, they did have their electronic babysitter. But, you know, one of them looked up and was like, Mom, like, why do they think this is a bad idea? And it was a great mom coaching moment, right? To say, sometimes people don't understand what's happening. And my kids learned about eminent domain that night because people were thinking they were, again, the government was taking their houses and this. And I think people from a community standpoint need to seek to understand. Right? Because they thought we were doing Section 8 houses. And I'm like, these are luxury townhomes, like complete opposite of where you're at. But we love drama in a community, right? I mean, that's what sells, right? Fear and controversy. So if we can get wrapped up in it, we get excited. And then the truth is usually not as juicy. So it's like, oh, okay. You know, and then, you know, so to me, as much as you can control the story is great. As much as you can educate people is great. And then, you know, again, do what you say you're going to do.
And I want to bring it back to the team as well, because, you know, having a realtor on your team that is in the know of what's happening, in addition to everyone else you just said, is really key. And just as an example, I'm not doing a whole development. I'm just doing a ground up construction project. And she then had recommendations on a GC. And I ended up interviewing two GCs, one that knew the town, the township of the people in the office and kind of all the different things, all the problems that could come up and just other things happening in the town itself. And the other one had never done a project in this particular area. And that became really a big sticking point, right? So the people on your team having the relationships with the town, you don't have to have the relationships with every single entity, but having people who do is really important because you know the challenges are going to come up. My question is actually, I hear so many times with women in our community, they're like, I saw a piece of land. I want to potentially buy it. What do I do next? And I get obviously and control it. Obviously, to your point, you know, doing the research, knowing what the community needs, the housing needs, all those key things. But like, what are just some of those initial questions that I'm like literally driving past a raw piece of land and I get excited because I'm like, there's an opportunity here. I could build something. What questions should I really ask myself even before I jump into building a team?
Yeah. First and foremost, as you point, the team's critical. As a real estate agent, I leverage other real estate agents to their expertise. I believe in my craft, right? I mean, and so with that, when you're driving by, the first thing I usually do is look and see like, what's the adjacency to it? Because if there's not a building there that's going to tell you what is the most cost-effective options, like, then the adjacency will tell you that from a development standpoint of what could go there. And then you got to go back to that step one, like look at the tapestry reports, look at who's in the community making money, where's the money going in and out. And then really third is who owns it, right? Because we don't, there are so many properties in our community that we can get for a dollar or bring somebody into the deal that we leave on the table because we don't educate ourselves in how to go into the process. And there are, my hometown community, there were over, over 223 properties on that the city owned that are not on the tax roll that in essence are losing the city's money. So when you drive by those vacant properties, the city may own it and be willing to partner with you on it. So those are the opportunities to seek to understand. And as you mentioned, a good real estate agent, a good contractor is worth their weight in gold.
when it comes down to zoning, right, you saw that lot over there and you took the steps that you're saying, Katie, and then you came through the zoning, right? And many times the zoning didn't change since 19, who knows? And that area was industrial in the past or commercial in the past, and right now it's totally residential. So the zoning needs to be adjusted. Many investors might see that as a issue, especially after you heard all the horror stories that we just told you. You're like, hell no.
Hell no. Run away.
Go through that. No.
Run away.
I want to go buy right and go through it. But I want to shine the light on the opportunity of really the rezoning process and the best use of the land, because immediately for people that never done development before, it's like, I need to start a little small and then I'll grow. But let's talk about the best use of the land, how to determine that. And not always bigger is better based on the construction cost. So I just want to dissect that a little bit for people to start thinking through.
Yes. So I'm going to end with the first thing you said, because that popped right in my mind, is that I think something can relate to is you don't want to buy the most expensive house in the neighborhood from a resale standpoint, right? You want to have a good house, but not the most expensive house. So you don't want to have the biggest unless you're going all in and big, especially not for your first time. So maybe you partner with somebody who's done development before, or you step into it, you go small. So when you talk about zoning and the best and highest use of the land, that's always the key in real estate, right? What's going to be the best and highest use of this land? If you're in a proactive growing community, a lot of times what they'll do is do overlay districts into those areas. We see these a lot in warehouse districts, industrial parks that have been vacated. And what they did is they're being proactive and setting the stage for all the developers to come in at an easier pace, at a quicker pace. And what an overlay district can do, and I'm going to tell you two things it can do. It can either add additional uses that you then don't have to go through the zoning period or zoning process, and redo it, or it can restrict. I've only seen it restricted once, but it was such a burn. I always want to mention it to people. So those are areas when you're looking at the zoning per se on like a GIS map or in the, ask, then call the community and say, do you have any overlay districts in this area? Is there any additional uses? And then from a zoning standpoint, again, going to that network, if they have a city plan, if they've kind of taken the time to hire, using an architect, I'm going to say that, using an architect to put the plan together.
Yes, they please, thank you.
Yeah, they will have a vision of what they want there, right? And so then that helps you, again, build the case. We're online with your 2030 plan, right? Like, you want as much ammo as you can. But the rezoning process shouldn't be daunting if you're, again, in alignment. If you're in alignment with the community, it shouldn't be daunting. You are always going to have people that are not educated. Seek it, change the game in your mind. It's a marketing opportunity, because those people usually will become your biggest advocates and fans, like, once they understand it. So use it as a marketing opportunity to educate.
And the rezoning process, to your point, is something that you shouldn't hide or run away from. Because I have to say, every project, I feel like every project Andres and I have done together, every project that is worth its weight in gold has hair on it, has issues.
Lots of hair, horse hair included.
Exactly. Even horse hair. So it's not, I'm doing a project, like I said, in my town, it's literally doesn't have an actual, it has a street, but it's like on the towpath. Literally, like where bikers are, runners are, that's how you have to drive to get to the property. So think about the construction work that we're going to have to do, the cranes. This is not going to be like easy, running in the park, lovely. It's going to be, there's going to be a lot of moving parts. Most people are not interested in doing that. Well, there's now an opportunity. I feel like as investors, we, instead of seeing, oh, wow, if most people are running from it, if there's an opportunity there, it could be actually very lucrative if you do it right. So just want to make sure people do that and see that. I'd love to hear from you of what, when you had to rezone, like an example, it doesn't have to be a horror story. It could be actually something that worked out really well, but give us a little bit of an understanding of something that you've had to go through in terms of zoning. How did you manage it? How did you navigate it? So we can get into your head of, your mindset around it.
Yeah, I think I go through the rezoning process at least once a year, so I'm pretty familiar with it. One is knowing your dates. I mean, that's a critical time frame, especially when you're controlling the property for purchase. You have to be able to make sure you have that due diligence in your contract. That's the one thing as a real estate agent I see a lot of people do not do, a real estate broker. So I think that's the biggest part is know your dates, know what you need to have going in. There's usually a list in the application of the files that you need. And so again, have your team come to the table with you. Have your architect come to those meetings. A lot of times if you're going into a new community or you haven't been there before, like you said, hiring that contractor from the community, hiring the architect from the community, you're in essence hiring those relationships on the zoning board and the council. And that's going to be key. Now, you also want to double check the relationship. That's a big one to make sure it's a positive relationship. But most of the time they're going to know, hey, you know, Bob's your sidewalk guy, right? This is going to be this. This is going to be sticking points. So they'll help you kind of build your case and your story before you go there. And then really, what I like to do as much as possible is engage with those zoning people or the council people one-on-one, bring them out to the site, meet with them, talk to them about it, see how we can make the project better before we're, you know, around the horseshoe, you know, and in essence, whether it's a zoning board or the council. And I think that that's kind of like business 101, right? Like know the decision before you go into the meeting, really. And not saying you still can't get tackled, but having that proper team, again, network is net worth, and knowing that you can build it, knowing what you need, knowing how you have your architect, your civil engineer, do your site plans, layouts, know your numbers, know your why you're doing it, and then really allow your team to even come with you to those meetings, to help give you that credibility if you're a new developer in those areas. And I think those are some key points to start off with.
Many investors, when they come across a piece of land, right, there is a lot of questions inside their mind. If they haven't done a development, the question is this a deal? Or I guess it's not because it's been sitting here for as long as I can think of. So it might not be a deal. So they don't know if it is a good deal or a bad deal. And by the way, for all of you that are listening at InvestorCon, one of my favorite sessions, it's called Good Deal, Bad Deal, where we present all of you attendees a good deal and a bad deal. It could be two good deals or it could be two bad deals. Anyway, we break down and you're going to be able to decide if you would pursue that deal or if you wouldn't. It's a very interactive workshop style that we do at InvestorCon. And I'm super excited about this year because Katie is going to be doing a version of new development, good deal, bad deal. We have never done this before. And I think that the goal here is to make new development more accessible for all of the investors that are attending it. So you have that in your toolbox. Okay. So just keep in mind, if you haven't scheduled your flight and booked your hotel and got your ticket, check the link below and reserve your spot today. So Katie, for all the women that are listening that are thinking about how can I do new development? I don't have a pile of cash sitting down in my living room and I've never done large developments. So it seems very far. It seems that I need to gain more experience. So maybe in 10 years after I've done X, Y, and Z projects, then I will have gained the right to dare to develop something. And I want to talk about that mindset barrier. What would you say to those investors that are thinking like that?
When are you going to decide to invest in yourself? That's exactly what I would say to them. My coach, when I was running my family's construction company, I wanted to get into development and nobody would teach me, right? The thing is, I wasn't asking. You know, we kind of hold that mirror up and say, well, is that really the story? Is that really the truth? And my coach goes, okay, so what if everybody that you know that could teach you readily, you know, died tomorrow? He said, God forbid, right? God forbid they did. He's like, what are you going to do? Hold up and, you know, cry? And I'm like, probably for a little bit. And he goes, okay, then what? I said, then I'd go out and I'd ask every single person I know that's doing development, and how do you do it why do you do it? And what's the, you know, what's a scar and a success that you would want to talk about? And he goes, that's your lead generation for the next week. And I did, I called everybody in my community that I know. I told my, I asked my attorney, can I hire you for an hour to talk to me about development? He's like, yeah. And he goes, that was the most entertaining hour he's ever had with a client because he's just talking deals. He's talking, how do you get in the game? And the one thing I enjoyed about all those conversations, and again, I'm going to go back to that network is net worth, is the same thing you mentioned, InvestorCon, getting in the room with people who have done it. People want to help you not go through those scars again. People want to collaborate with you. They want to, you know, join forces. And in those conversations, they became my advocate for giving me deals and also really a mentor to ask questions. So that would be, is start investing in yourself. Kick the can out the door.
You mentioned about mentorship, right? I worked for a developer. He was 75. I don't know how old is he right now. We're not going to say that to him. He might be listening to this. He was 75 years old. He came from second generation of builders and developers. And I was on his hip for 2 years. I was on his hip. And I experienced different types of developments, of large developments, small developments. I was in conversations with the city. I was in conversations with, I don't know, six different types of attorneys. And looking back, how much I bypass the learning curve by just being next to him and seeing the way that he thought through a deal, that he negotiated a lease agreement, that he evaluated development of this property versus that property. I think it's really priceless when you associate yourself with somebody that who has done it. So if I were to start new development nowadays, of course, we can all do by ourselves. All the women that are listening, you are fully complete and capable of doing it on your own. I think there is so much advantage when you partner up with somebody that who has done it before. The key point here that I want to ask you, Katie, is that many women have been burned before, right? Take advantage of, underestimated. What would you do in order to evaluate if a partner is the right fit? What do you personally do?
Yeah, I look at who they've partnered with in the past, and I would go and talk to them, and you know, how did this development go? Because let's throw the elephant in the room on the table. You're gonna have a bad project. Like, not everyone what? Is gonna be a know, home okay. run.
Yeah. I don't know about so, that. I don't know.
How many, Katie? How many? We have the rest of the day. We can tell you, right?
So, how do you show up when it's bad, right? How do you show up? How did you show up during COVID, right? I mean, we doubled down and did PPP meetings.
Yes.
With our tenants. Like, you get money, your business is successful, we're successful, right? How do you show up in the hard times? Because I know where you are in the community, like the pillar. I know what the community thinks to be, right? Because I've done at least that much to have the conversation. I want to know, when times get tough, are you digging in or digging out? That's what I want to know in a partner. Because to me, I can raise money. And ladies, if you're listening, guys, if you're listening, you can raise money for a good project. All right. You need character and integrity around you in a development situation. You need somebody that's going to go to the mat for you when you're not in the room. And that's what I look at, especially from a GP position. One of my best GPs, and I won't mention his name so his head doesn't get big, he calls me the adult supervision, you know, and I call him, you know, he's like the godfather. He makes sure that, like, he has a tougher skin than I do in certain situations. And so we have that good cop, bad cop, and you need that chemistry in there. And I also, when you said on somebody's hip, I mean, the one thing it just blows my mind how we think we should do it all ourselves. And I think, you know, school teaches us that we, you know, here's your coach, here's your teacher, here's your go. And then we get kicked out in the world and it's like, no, go figure it out. Right. But we all also know, again, rising tide lifts all boats, and that I know if I can partner with you and you have different scars and you have different knowledge, we're going to be better as a unit together. And that's what I think people they miss the boat on. And figure out your non-negotiables, right? Going into the deal. I want to get this. I want to control this. I want to oversee this. Figure out what you're willing to let go so you can sleep at night, right? That's always my second. And then three, make sure you're in a white collar mindset versus a blue collar mindset, right? You don't have to do everything, especially if you want to scale. You have to get out of that mindset that school and society teaches you to be an operator, to outsource. And again, going back to those first two things, that's where you're going to start to set up the systems to scale.
I love that. You said so many things that I'm like, partner with people who have different scars. That's very powerful. And I think there's a lot of truth in that, so that everyone can bring their best to that next project. And also, how do you show up in hard times? And I think those are the kinds of questions that, for those listening, when you're talking to people and you're networking with people, you know, not just talking about, oh, what projects are you doing right now? Talk about the hard stuff. Have those really authentic conversations. That's what I love most about InvestorCon. You know, women are at the pool, at the hot tub, in the bathroom, you know,
That's true.
That I love about, because Justin and I have literally started this community because of our wanting to be as authentic and real as possible with women, then to create an event that cultivates that. And then to hear the women going really deep, really quickly. I think those are the kind of conversations at InvestorCon and anywhere you go that matters to build a team, to build character, to build your leadership skills. Like, ask them about the hard times. See what they say. Because if they're like, everything's been great, I don't want to work with that person.
And if they say, I don't remember anything, that you haven't played the arena enough.
Exactly.
Because if you have played the arena enough, you got tomatoes in your face. You got bigger.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And Liz, you mentioned it at InvestorCon, like in Austin, I had some great authentic conversations, and it's getting in the room where people, where they feel comfortable, they feel vulnerable enough to learn. And I think that that's something that women have to get out of our own head, that, you know, we're always seeing that we got it all together. No, I'm just going to say shit's everywhere, right? Yeah. Like, it's like, we can beep that up. But like, in that, like, let's be real, ladies. Let's get in the room. Let's be real. Have those authentic conversations. And, you know, you're going to stumble. You're going to fall. You didn't learn to ride a bike perfectly the first time you got on it, right? You got the bloody knees. You got all that. And you kept going. That's the biggest thing, too, is when you have a team surrounding you with people with different scars and different experiences, they keep you going. They push you. They throw opportunities at you, you know, and it's being in the room.
Yeah. Katie, this has been great. Where can everyone listening learn more about you?
Yes, you can find me on social media at thekatiekim or katiekim.com.
Awesome. All this information you guys can find on our show notes. Katie, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And I'll see everybody at InvestorCon in June.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to receive updates on our next interviews, go to our website, therealestateinvestor.com. There, you can subscribe to our show, become part of our investor community, and get updates on upcoming episodes.
If you like our show, please share with other women who would benefit. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And as always, we encourage you to take one action as a result of today's show and put it into motion so you can live both a financially free and balanced life. Thanks for spending time with us.
Ciao.